some extra copies maybe floating around over here? I only made, I think, 12 copies or so, which, we're up to Perek Yud Bet, the 12th chapter in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Last Perek, we were learning last week about a very evil guy. His name was Nachash. Yes. Sounds like a good idea. Okay. Yes. So, in the last parak, we learned about a gentleman who was not much of a gentleman. His name was Nachash, which means a snake, which is not a very nice name for a guy. But nonetheless, that's what he was called. He came from the nation of Ammon, and he was very upset. And one of the things that he turned to a specific city, a very tiny Jewish city, and he told them, he said, you know, I'm going to be able to wipe you guys out right off the face of the earth. And he said, okay, well, let's make a bris, we'll make a covenant. And he said, well, I'm not interested in that. Instead, I'm going to do something else. I'm going to ask every single one of you to give me a little donation. And what was that donation?
Your
right eyeball. Just give me your right eye. That's what he wanted. And somehow he was able to be persuaded to wait a period of a week's time. And then afterwards, during that time, they were able to convince all the Jewish people through the new king, the first king of Israel, who is Shaul, King Saul, that he was able to convince everyone to help in this battle. And in turn, they were successful in defeating this very mighty nation of Ammon and also the king Nachash. And because of this, we ended off last week, which concluded the chapter, discussing how even though initially when Saul was appointed and anointed as the king, not everyone accepted him. They looked at him and said, what is this type of guy? In fact, as we mentioned, he was such a humble person when they appointed him through a lottery system and also asking the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, through his tools, the Urim V'Tumim, which light up. They called for him and he wasn't around. And they found out that he was hiding in a in the coat room. He didn't want anyone to know. Right? The guy won like the greatest lottery ticket. I just found out that on the news there was a person that had scratch-offs. I don't know if you heard about this. And not only did she won a second time, right? I don't know why if you won $1 million you want to keep buying scratch-off tickets, but can you imagine, forget about winning $1 million, but it ended up, and she was very generous because the first million she gave to her kids. So it was clear that it was really supposed to be for her. So she finally got the message the second time. So she'll keep the next million for herself. Anyway, the point is that this guy was basically given the greatest lottery ticket, becoming the king, the most powerful person in the world, certainly of the Jewish nation, and he didn't want to accept it. He was such a humble person. He was eventually told that, you know, you should be the king. After all, you're appointed by this great man named after this Sefer, the book of Shmuel. Samuel is the one who anointed him, who was the Navi, the prophet of the Jewish people at that time. And not everyone accepted him because look at him. He doesn't even want to be the king. He's hiding. He's not interested. So because of this, this war changed everyone's minds. Everyone saw the tremendous power of this man, of King Shaul, and the position of leadership that he accepted. And therefore, now at this point, as we introduce the beginning of this parak, we now see that Shaul, in fact, is this powerful and mighty king, which we're now going to see in a moment, the beginning of Perek Yud Bet, which is really going to be the words of Samuel of Shmuel, that Shmuel is going to be the one that is going to address the Jewish people and give some very harsh words, some divrei tochacha, some words of admonition and perhaps very hard lecturing to reprimand their behavior. We're going to see what their behavior was, which was negative, which had something to do with the appointing of a king. Okay. With that said, we're going to begin with the beginning of Perek Yud Bet. It's on page 68. For those that do have this handout, you'll notice on the facing side, there's an English translation, which is by verse. So for those that would like to follow on page 69, we're on verse 1, then Samuel said. Pasukal, Vayomer Shmuel El Kol Yisrael. So Shmuel turned to the entire, all the Jewish people after this incredible victory, this incredible war. Hine Shemati Bekolchem. Shmuel says, listen, behold, I've listened to your voice. L'chol Asher Amartem Li. Whatever, anything that you said to me, I always was there for you. As a leader, sometimes a person who's in a position of power, what is these nobodies, these basic second-class citizens, I don't have to listen to you. But Shmuel was a tremendous leader, that he trusted and considered the words of every person to be valuable. And he listened to you. V'amlech aleicha melech. And I appointed a king. As we mentioned a couple of chapters ago, the Jewish people, for some reason, wanted a king, which seems to be a logical thing, because after all, a king is powerful, he creates an army, which will protect the Jewish people. However, as we discussed a few weeks back, it was really not the proper way that they asked, perhaps not the proper time for a king either, because, as we're going to see, there's nothing wrong with having a king. In fact, it's mentioned in the Torah, there's a commandment to have a king. However, the purpose for having a king is not just in order to be able to serve you as fighting to protect you, but it really is supposed to keep you on the proper mindset, the proper frame of mind as a observant and an ethical person. But they were only interested in a king, k'chol ha-goyim, like all the other nations, which is just to protect them. But not in order for them to have to serve Hashem, to serve God. And therefore, because of this, Hashem as well as Shmuel were very upset that they were appointed, that they asked for a king. And they didn't think they should have had a king. But nonetheless, Hashem said, fine, we'll give you a king. And certainly, as we just saw, Shaul became the first of the Malachim, first of the kings in the Jewish people. So says Shmuel, listen, I listen to what you say. I don't even like the things that you say. I still do it. I don't even think the smartest decisions, but I did it anyway. We're at the Pasuk Bet. Now before we continue with the next Pasuk, which will in turn have us change and turn the page, we mentioned last week that it's in this packet, you'll notice on page 68, it says on the right side, Haftaras Korach. This, for some reason, is the reading after the Torah reading of Parshas Korach, which Korach wasn't the nicest guy. Unfortunately, he ended up dying in a very strange way, getting swallowed up into the ground. And we have to see the connections, because whenever you study the Haftorah on Shabbos, when we read the Haftorah, there is a correlation. There's some connection between the Torah reading and the Haftorah. The question is, what is that connection? Because at a certain point, the Jewish people were not allowed to teach Torah in public. They weren't allowed to read the Torah in the congregation. However, the Haftorah was something which did not have the same laws, and therefore that was allowed. So that's the purpose of the Haftorah, is that we can't read the Torah, at least they were able to read the Haftorah, which has some connection, some comparison to the Torah reading. So hopefully, as we go through this chapter, we'll have an understanding, perhaps, of the significance of why this Haftorah was chosen. And what I did, as in our packet, is I made a copy as well on the last two pages of the Haftorah, which you could glance at. You'll notice is the same reading as we're doing right now. And as the art scroll, the Stone Chumash, always does, it gives a little bit of an explanation of the significance of the Haftorah and its connection to the Torah reading, which perhaps you can see, we'll see in a moment, but you can certainly glance at that now as well. In the meantime, we're going to continue with Pasuk Bet, verse 2, V'atah, now. Hine ha-melech mizhalich lifneichem. Now behold, the king, this guy, I'm Shmuel, the prophet, there's this other great guy, his name is Saul, he's right in front of you. V'ani zekanti v'sabti. This guy is a great, powerful king. He's great. You want me? You think you remember me when I was a strong, powerful guy, a very influential individual? Do you want me to remain in power? Not a good idea. After all, I'm Zakanti Visapti. I'm old and gray. I'm a really, really old man, as it's translated. Uvanai Hinam Itchem. And my children, because after all, Shmuel also had children. However, we learn that they did not follow the proper path. They were not as righteous as their father. Va'ani hesalach lifneichem, page 70, and I will go before them. Menurai, I walk before you from my youth ad hayom hazeh, until this day. And what it means, ani hishalachti, is exactly that he walked around. Because we mentioned that Shmuel was very unusual. Shmuel was an individual that, as powerful as he was, and a man of tremendous power, and a judge as he was, he easily could have told people, you know, my office is in Ozone Park, and have an appointment at 10:30 in the morning, and if you're there at 10:31, I'm not going to see you. But if you're there at 10:30, you're going to wait for 3 hours. You know, that's fine. That I don't care about. Grab a magazine and hang out there for a few hours. That's not how Shmuel was. Shmuel was an individual that traveled from city to city. He traveled all over the place. He wanted to make sure that Torah was taught, that ethics and values were something which was part of the Jewish philosophy. And he didn't care if it meant that he has to go that extra mile, quite literally, to make sure that that happened. And because of that, we said, that's why he became old. That's why he's saying, Vanizer Kanti Vasapti, because we mentioned Shmuel, when he passed away, he didn't die at such a very old age. He was a very young man. 52 years old. That's how when he died, 52. However, because Vani hasalachti lefneichem, because he traveled all over the place and he never had any peace of mind, he was constantly running with his suitcase, traveling from town to town, it got the best of him. Physically, it drawn him out. It made him very, very weak. And therefore, he said, listen, even though I served you and I traveled, I did all these things, I can't do that anymore. I have to pass that baton to someone else. I can't continue in my position of power. And you asked for a king. I didn't want to have a king. There's a king right here. Don't worry about me anymore. Take care. He'll take good care of you as your new melech, as your new king. Now, again, in the back of our minds, we have to constantly be trying to remind ourselves, what does this reading have to do with the Torah reading of Korach, a man who rebelled? And ultimately, he rebelled about a position of leadership. He didn't think that Moshe and Aaron should have been leaders. He, for some reason, thought that he was more qualified. Or at least, perhaps, even if he didn't think he was qualified, I don't care, just give me the job anyway. I don't care what my resume says, I want the job. And Korach, in turn, was punished. So we have to think, as we read this, perhaps we'll come up with some insights. And if, of course, as we always do, if you have questions or thoughts, we certainly appreciate any thoughts about it. The connection between our reading and that of Parshas Korach. In the meantime, let's turn back to page 68 as we see this first Rashi. Rashi says on page 68, which generally everything is underlined, here it's in the very bottom two lines, which is on the right side of page 68, underneath Rashi. What does it mean, that I'm such an old guy? The Omru Rabotenu, that it's brought down in the Talmud and Tractate Ta'anit, Zikna Kopsa Olav, Kidisa Masechta Sinus, that his age grabbed hold of him. It jumped. It just took complete control. They, as we mentioned, some people who are in tremendous positions of leadership, like a president, they get so old so fast. You know, they're high. They become a president. Looks like a nice young guy. You know, to get Ronald Reagan, he was a nice movie star. And then 4 years later, you look at him like, hey, what happened to you? Right? It's because of the position. Is so incredibly stressful that sometimes zikna kapsa love. And that's what Shmuel was. He was a person who was traveling. He was constantly stressed out, making sure that things were done properly. And that affected him physically to the point that he looked older and became older than that of a typical individual. Which is, we also mentioned that was the significance. We discussed this on Shabbos in Perkei Avos, that person should despise positions of leadership, the Mishnah says, in Ethics of Our Fathers. And the reason is because if a person wishes arichas yomim upon themselves, a long life, don't become a leader. Because the stress literally will kill you. Just as we find by Yosef, the great man Yosef, who was sold to Egypt. He was such a great righteous person that we know this by his last name. What was Yosef's last name? Hatzadik, Yosef Hatzadik. That was his last name. He was a righteous man. Yet, we know that out of all of his siblings, he died first. He was the youngest. He died at the youngest age. So where's the justification? Doesn't make sense. He was given all these different terrible tests and tribulations. He passed every single one with flying colors. His reward is what? That he has to die before all of his brothers? It's not a reward. It's not a punishment. It's a reality. A person who is in a position of leadership, that stress literally will kill him. And that's exactly what Rashi is telling us as well. That Shmuel, even at a young age, said, "Ani zakanti desabti." I became older than I really had to in my age. Now, one of the things also, as we now turn to page 70 in this verse, it says, "V'nai hinam itchem." My children are with you. Now, what does it mean, my children are with you? So if you imagine that, you know, maybe it was a month or so ago, some people went on a bus, and we went to a rally to support Israel, right? And if you were lucky, and you know how to maneuver like a good running back, you can sneak between people and you can get really, really close to the bandstand, right up front. Which fortunately, I was right up the front. I was only a few feet away. However, was I in the stage? Was I up there? I wasn't hanging out with Hillary Rodham Clinton, right? That was on the ground. I was with them. I was with the common folk. The people up on the stage, the powerful leaders, those people were up there. Everyone else was down there. And that's what... There you go. Exactly. But that's what Shmuel is saying here. Uvanai hinam itchem. They're with you. They're not standing up here on the stage as I'm speaking to you on a microphone. Shmuel is doing, addressing everyone. Look, do you see my kids hanging out next to me? They're not here because they're not in positions of leadership. They're with you, which means that even though I have a tremendous pull, I could easily have snuck my children into some fluffy job, right? I could have given them some job somewhere in the White House or whatever, doing something. Who knows what they were doing? Who cares about their qualifications? They're my kids. I'll give them a good job. No, that's not how I act. I want what's best for the people. And even though it's not necessarily what's best for my children, I want to put the person in this as a king, someone that is the most qualified. I could have easily said, yeah, my son is the king. And who's going to argue with me? I'm Shmuel, you know. Who's going to disagree? It did. Exactly. This itself is proof that it had to come from Hashem. Because the natural tendency of a person is to want to give that position to their own child. Right? So the fact that he didn't, it shows that clearly it wasn't his doing. It must have been from Hashem.
Right.
So this is what he was telling him. That even though I had this great position, I never took advantage of it. And if you think that's not enough, I want to ask at this point, before I start screaming at you and reprimanding you and lecturing you, I want to see if there's anyone that disagrees about my righteousness. Pasuk Gimel. Verse 3, it says, Hinei anu bi neged Hashem v'neged Mishicho. I'm asking for you to testify against me in front of Hashem, in front of the Anointed One, which is the King. Because a king is always anointed with oil, as we saw. I want to ask you a few questions, and I want any person, I don't care who you are, to answer. Eshor mi lokachti? Did I take anyone's ox? Apparently, did I steal anything from you? Now remember, I traveled all over town, every single city. Did I ever take your ox? Now, we're going to see that it doesn't mean stealing it. We'll see in a moment what Rashi says about that. The chamor mi lokachti, and a donkey did I take. So did I take an ox? Did I take a donkey? So this is the second time it says the word me, which means who. Perhaps we're going to continue and count how many times the word me is here. Es mi ashakti, es mi ritzosi. Is who also, is there anyone that I took things from, anyone that I robbed, anyone, ritzosi, comes from ritzon, that I took something forcefully against their will. Miad mi lokachti kofer, was there any person that I coerced, I forced them to take? The alis ein I be abo, the oshib lochem. If there's a single person that has something that I have, which is yours, speak up, the Ashibuchem. and I'll give it to you. Which means I don't even care if it's true, because I could easily take you to court, and the burden of proof is on you. Because if I have money, if I have an ox or an animal, and I have it in my property, and you say it's yours, well, prove it. He's not even asking you to prove it. If you speak up and say that I have something which is yours, I'll just give it to you. I'm not even going to question it, because I'm so sure, and as well as everyone else's, that I never took a single thing throughout all my years in office as the prophet, as the Navi for the Jewish people. And Rashi elaborates exactly what's going on over here, that he wants them to testify with tremendous strength, such confidence. So much so as, did anyone count how many times it says the word me in that pasuk?
Five.
It says it five times. So some explain, what is the significance of five? Opposite, what the not five is chamisha chumshi Torah. Look at, I can even, like a person goes to court and they put their hand on the good book. So I can swear to you by the Torah, by the five books of the Torah, that I did not take anything. That's why some explain he says the word me five times, because otherwise it seems quite repetitive, redundant. But Rashi says even more. Rashi on page 70, the top line, and Shormi Lokachti, when I said, did I take, apparently did I steal an ox, it doesn't mean that I take it for good, it means la'avodasi, for my service, for my avoda, which means just to borrow it. I didn't even borrow anything. Like you go to your neighbor, you want some brown sugar, which you don't even return. You want to borrow the lawnmower, you'll return the lawnmower, you might not pay him back for the gasoline you used. This guy never even borrowed a guy's ox, never borrowed anything, even for his own work to help him with his field. Continuing in Rashi, the chamor milokachti, did I ever take anyone's donkey? Well, what's so great about a donkey? So Rashi says, kishayise hoylech meir leir. You remember me, I traveled from every single city. You remember me, I'm that guy that was hanging out on a donkey. Now sometimes, unfortunately, my donkey will get a flat tire, right? Or my donkey's transmission will blow. So I'm going to need a new donkey. I didn't make a difference. No matter what, when I was traveling all over and I had like hundreds of thousands of miles on my donkey, lishbot osam, and I didn't do it for me, I did it for you, to judge you, to help you out, al iski sarchehem, to help you out on your specific needs, your specific matters. I was there to serve you. Ha'isa ho'ilich al chamor shli. Whose donkey was it? Whose automobile was I driving? It was mine. I could have easily taken from you, but I never did. It's like a person is on business, so one of the greatest things about going on business is business expenses, right? All of a sudden you can, you know, for dinner when I'm here, you know, I'll survive with some bread, smear some peanut butter. But I'm on vacation, I'm on a business trip, peanut butter ain't good enough for me. I'm going to go to the fanciest restaurant. I'm going to go to the most expensive hotels. And it's traveling expenses. I would never go first class, but hey, it's traveling expenses. It's not me anyway. What's the difference? It's my business. It's not me. And that's how it is. I received a grant in my school, a reading first grant. It's an incredible federal grant under No Child Left Behind. And unfortunately, I received an email like a day too late. It said all administrators or principals can go to Reno, Nevada to learn about this system, this educational system. Now, why do I have to travel all the way to Reno to learn about how to read a book or how to teach kids? You know the answer to that. But unfortunately, everyone grabbed it before I was able to cash in. But that's how it is. Business expense. You know, you can't even blame Shmuel. But Shmuel said, I never even took a donkey. I never took a penny, even though it was for you and it was traveling expenses. That's not something which I never took advantage. You see the next Rashi, when he says, that's me, Ritzosi. What does it mean, Ritzosi? So Rashi translates who? Chomes Dalin. It means stealing from the poor. I never stole from poor people. Now, a little bit of advice, if you want to become a thief, probably the best place to steal is someone who is rich. You break into someone's house in a studio apartment and you see that there's nothing there. You open up the refrigerator, maybe there's some mustard. Like, what are you going to steal from a poor guy? What does that mean? That I never stole from someone poor. So the significance that some explain is to steal from someone who's rich, someone who has lawyers, like the dream team that we know of, the famous with OJ, right? You can't start up with him. Right? You can even perhaps be an alleged murderer, but if you have wealth, and you can buy your way out of anything. And you're not going to start up with someone who's wealthy because of their tremendous position of power. However, someone who's poor, you can easily take from them. What are they going to do? They're going to take you to court. Who are they going to hire? They can't afford a lawyer. So Shmuel is saying, I never took a rich person, of course, I wouldn't take from because they're too powerful. You know, they're going to destroy me. But even Chomus Dalim, I wouldn't take from someone who's poor. I would never take advantage of another person. Which, of course, is really when we study in the Torah, we find that Hashem is very particular about dalim, people who are poor or who are unfortunate. The almana, the yasam, a little child who unfortunately does not have parents. The Torah specifically talks about that person, how you have to have tremendous compassion for that individual. So too, Shmuel said that I would be that way as well. I would never take advantage of another person because of my position of power. The last Rashi on this verse, V'ashiv lochem, kol ma shetamru, whatever you say. Whatever you say, I'll give. So if you say, I owe you $30,000, I'll give you $30,000. Most people would say, well, do you have a document? I don't even know who you are. Nothing with you. I never had a relationship with you. If you claim that I owe you money, I'm going to give it to you. You claim that I have some livestock here, it's yours. I'm not even going to ask. It's yours. That's how confident Shmuel was, that he didn't even have to worry that anyone would come up against him. And perhaps say that what he has is theirs. Continue with the next pasuk. Pasuk Dalet tells us v'yomru. And how did they respond to this great man, to Shmuel? Did they say, "Hey, this is my chance to sue"? Right? You watch TV during the day. It's, you know, you have all these 1-800 lawyer. Maybe you were hurt. Maybe you weren't hurt. Well, we'll determine it. Give me a call, right? So how would they... This is their chance. They can cash in on a guy who's going to be handing out and writing, giving them blank checks. So how do the Jewish people respond to Shmuel? Did they take advantage of him? Absolutely not. V'yomru, they said, Lo shaktanu, lo ritzosanu. You never took anything from us. You never robbed us. You never stole anything. Anything that you have is rightfully yours. You never took from a person anything. Nothing. Which, this is an incredible statement. He never took anything, because we mentioned that there was a very interesting approach, philosophy, that Shmuel had. Shmuel would travel from city to city. And you can imagine, if you have friends, like when a person goes on vacation, you know, you have a friend in Florida, I have a friend who's in Arizona. So if I'm traveling there, why should I spend money for a hotel? I'll go to their house, you know, and, you know, I'm not sure if they want me there. I'm not going to ask them, but if they say I can stay there, that's great for me. I'll save some money on a hotel. Shmuel never did that. Shmuel never stayed at anyone's house. He always stayed in a hotel, or he paid his own way. He never took advantage of any relationship. Although we do find, as we mentioned, that some people had a different approach, like Elisha. Elisha, when he would travel around, the great man, he used to stay at people's houses. Like the famous story about the woman, Shulamis, that her child was dying, and he revived this child. So he used to stay at this family's house. And the Talmud says, if you want to act like Elisha, do so. If you want to act like Shmuel, you may do so. Because each one had their own approach to outreach, to Kiruv, and what was the best way. For Elisha, it was better to interact with people by going to their homes. For Shmuel, he was a judge. A judge is constantly being criticized of shochad. He's going to take a bribe. Perhaps he has certain relationships, and he's being persuaded this way and that direction. Therefore, he never wanted to stay at anyone's house. He never took a single thing. So much so that not only did he know it, everyone agreed, V'lokachtim yad ish mu'uma. You're right. No one ever gave you anything. You never took anything which was someone else's. V'yomer lehem. And now Shmuel, who's probably feeling pretty good about himself, said, Eid Hashem Bochem, Ve'ed Meshichu Hayom Hazeh. Eid, let it be a testimony that Hashem should be a witness on this matter, as well as the Anointed One, the King, should also be hearing this thing. Kilo Matzasim Yadi Miuma, there was nothing found in my hands. Vayomer Eid. And he said it is a test. We testify. Now it's interesting. He asked for not one, but he asked for more people. He said that the anointed one should be a witness. God should be a witness. All of you should be witnesses. And the last, second to last word in this verse, in verse 5, is Vayomer Eid. He said, which is Lashon Yachid, singular, which is strange. It should say Vayomru. They testified. They agreed that, in fact, this was true. Why does it say in the language which is singular? So there's a couple approaches. We'll begin with the Radak. The Radak says over here, still on page 70, the first, the last line, which is before the lines get wider, Vayomer Eid. Why does it say Vayomer, not Vayomru? So says the Radak, Kol Yisrael Ke'elchad Amru Eid. Can you imagine all the Jews actually agreed to something for once, you know? That they all were on the same page. Ah, right. That right over there. It says V'yichan Sham Yisrael Neged Har. It says that they encamped, but it's in a singular form, because at that point they were Ish Echad B'Lev Echad. They all had the same mindset. Incredibly, they all had the same mindset. Can you imagine a leader, as we talked about before, the president of the United States? He knows that the majority of the people didn't even want him. You don't even win the popular votes, and you're the president of the United States. It's the reality. You're a leader. You're not going to expect everyone to like you. Over here, Shmuel was saying something. I'm a good guy. I never took anything. Can you imagine that every single person agrees to it? Every single person. That shows the tremendous quality of this type of a guy. He must have obviously been a very authentic and truly righteous person. But that's what the Radak says. Lafikach Omer v'yomer Lashon Yachid. That's why it says in the singular language to say that they were all agreeing, that they were all together. And we find that whenever the Jewish people have achdus, have unification, that they're successful. As we mentioned, the reason why that they were able to defeat Ammon in the previous chapter was because they were all ke'echad. They were all as one. If we were only able to have achdus, unity, certainly we're able to be strong. And when it comes to the war, when they were able to defeat the Ammonim, it was based on three words, divide and conquer. If you can divide them, disperse them, so that they don't have strength in numbers, then they're easy to be destroyed. Now Rashi says a different explanation. Why does it say Vayomer in Lashon Yachid in the singular language? Why does it say it this way? So Rashi says, Pasuk Hey, Baskol. We're going to get a little bit spiritual here for a second. So let's try this opinion out for size. Baskol Yotzas Ve'omers 8. What was the one person, this one singular agreeing that there's testification, that he's agreeing that this is in fact is true? It was not a person. It was a baskel. It was a spiritual, heavenly voice that was agreeing to this whole matter. This is one of the few places that we find that there was an agreement from the heavens above to what was occurring down in this world below, as it's stated in the Tractate Makot. So Vayomer could perhaps mean, either as the Radak, that they were all together, they all agreed, they were all as one, and therefore it's written in a singular language, because the Jewish people are sometimes guf echad, like one body, like one unit. Or perhaps it's referring to a more spiritual approach, that of a baskel. Now, we're now going to see some very powerful and heavy words. He's going to give Musar, he's going to rebuke them about wanting to have a king. Now, some question, why at this point, why did he have to give this little backdrop? Why did he have to introduce and begin his little conversation with the Jewish people by saying, oh, I never took your oxes, I never plowed with them, I never borrowed them, I never borrowed their car, slept at your house, never, don't have anything of yours. Why does he have to say all these things? Why does he have to start bragging and showing off that he's so great? What's the significance of that? So, as we mentioned in our Perkei Avot class a few weeks ago, at the very end of Ecclesiastes and Koheles, it says, Sof davar kol nishma es alkim yorei v'es mitzvot sav shamar. The end of the matter, the conclusion of the brilliant man who wrote Ecclesiastes, he understood that the most important thing is to fear God and observe the mitzvot. Sof davar kol nishma, that's the end of the matter. We gave a different interpretation of that verse, that sof davar hakol nishma, if you want at the end of the matter that everyone, hakol nishma, everyone should listen to what you have to say, that people will value your opinion, that when you talk, people will listen. Esokim yorei, you have to be a person who fears God. You have to be an individual that when you say something, people are not going to say, what a hypocrite. What type of guy is this? This guy, I know what he really does. He's telling me to do it? Why don't you do it yourself? Practice what you preach. And therefore, if you want to be an effective speaker, an effective motivator, you have to do it yourself. In fact, you have to do it first. And once you are able to fix shop at home, then perhaps you can advise other people the proper ways to behave. Sof davar kol nishma. If you want everyone to hear what you have to say, you have to start first as Elokim Yorei. You have to be the person who is the ethical individual. Then afterwards people will listen to you. Otherwise, your words will mean nothing. And we talked about that of course is the significance in parenting and also being an educator, that you can't tell your child to do one thing and you do the opposite. Right? You can't tell your child, no, you shouldn't watch this movie because it's really bad, it'll poison your mind, and you're sitting there watching it. No, go over there, you can't watch this show. So you can watch it? Well, it doesn't make any sense. Well, why is it better for you? Because right? You're over 17, so what? Right? So, and if you want to teach your child, as we said, to be an honest individual, you should never lie. I'm very disappointed. I got this note from your teacher that said that she asked you why you didn't do your homework, and you said that you were at a wedding. I don't think you were at a wedding last night. What was your excuse? You lied to your teacher, and then 2 minutes later, you get a phone call. Your kid picks up the phone, and you tell your kid, "Oh,
no, I'm not here.
I'm not here. I'm not here." Right? I'm not here. So what do you expect for your child? If you're not teaching them those messages, the right messages, how do you expect them to be any better? So that's the idea. Sof davar kol nishma. If you want people to listen to you, you have to do it first. And perhaps that's the significance of what Shmuel's doing here as well. Shmuel is telling the people, he's about to give them tremendous ethics, trying to teach them that they were not acting, behaving properly. Most people are like, who are you? Who are you talking? You're a nobody. So Shmuel had to begin and say, I want to explain to you that I worked on myself. I put a lot of effort to make sure I didn't take things which were not right, rightfully mine. And do you agree to that? Aid. We testify, you're right. Okay, now that you know that I'm a person who has morals and ethics, now I feel I'm qualified to speak. And hopefully now you'll take what I say a little bit more seriously. Pasuk Vav tells us, V'yamer Shmuel el Am, and now Shmuel speaks to the nation, and he says the following. Hashem asher asa es Moshe ves Aaron v'asher he'elos avoseichem meretz Mitzrayim. He starts giving them a little history lesson, right? They apparently have their social studies books out, and he starts saying, well, you should know there was these two great leaders, Moshe and Aaron, and they took your forefathers out from Egypt. Okay, probably most people knew that story. Sometime they probably learned it. We understand why he had to tell them this now. V'yata pasuk Zion, and now his yatzvu v'yishavta idchem lifnei Hashem, and now stand up, and I will judge you before Hashem. Is called sidkos Hashem, all the concerning all the righteous actions of Hashem, asher asa idchem, all the great things that God did to you, des avoseichem, and to your forefathers. He took such great care of you. And this is how you repay him? You act terrible, you misbehave, you rebel against Hashem. It's one thing to rebel against someone and you can justify it on Oprah and say, well, I had a terrible childhood. My mother didn't hold me enough. My father didn't take me to enough ball games. That's why I'm a serial killer. If you want to justify your behavior because someone was not a good, didn't do good things to you, perhaps you're lying to yourself because you don't want to take responsibility for yourself. But at least perhaps there may be some truth to it. However, there's no truth to this because Hashem did everything for you. He took great care of you. You guys would still be slaves lifting, building another 3,000 pyramids if it wasn't for Hashem taking you out of Egypt. And this is how you repay Him? So that's how some explain one of the reasons why He needs to tell them this history lesson, to remind them. Because after all, look how you're behaving, and what, and based on what? Based on this tremendous relationship, God wanted to give you so much great things, and this is how you pay Him. It's terrible. So this is a way to really make them feel bad. Right, he was just saying, you know, pack up your bags. We're going on a guilt trip right now. Kasher bo Yaakov Mitzrayim pasaches, that when Yaakov came to Egypt after Yosef was the viceroy, Yaakov at an older age came with his children after the whole incident. As we read about in the book of Genesis, Yaakov eventually comes to Egypt. V'yizaku avoseichem el Hashem. And what did Yaakov do the second he crossed the border? As soon as he showed his passport and he was allowed to go into Egypt, he began to cry. V'yishlach Hashem es Moshe es Aaron. And eventually, Hashem sent these two great leaders, Moshe and Aaron, v'yotziu. That's avoseichem Mitzrayim. After they were enslaved in Egypt, they finally were taken out. Yeshiva b'makom hazeh, and they were put in this place. That Moshe and Aaron were the ones that walked, apparently, to your cities in Israel and set you up exactly where you are. Yeshiva b'makom hazeh. Moshe and Aaron set you up in this place. That's what he said. Now, most people would raise their hand and say, Shmuel, what are you talking about? Moshe and Aaron weren't alive in Israel. They unfortunately passed away before the Jews crossed the Jordan. Yoshua was the one. Joshua took them out, took them into Canaan, into Israel. What do you mean that they were the Yoshiva and B'makom Hazeh? They're the ones that settled us into this place. That's not true. Are you trying to pull the wool over my eyes? That's not true. So we look at the Radak. The Radak says, we're going to go for a moment out of order and see the last Radak on Pasuk Chet, which is the third to last line on the page 70. What does it mean, Yoshim b'makom hazeh? What does it mean that Moshe and Aaron are the ones that took them out of Egypt? Okay, that I agree with. What do you mean that they're the ones that settled you into Israel? That's not true. Says the Radak, V'hine Moshe v'Aaron meisu me'ever l'Yarden. What are you talking about? They died in the Transjordan. They never crossed the Yarden. They never made it to Israel. V'eich hoshibu osam b'makom hazeh. How could you say that they settled us, the Jewish people, in Israel? What do you mean? How could Shmuel say such a thing? Everyone knows it's historically unfounded. It's not true. They died before they went into Israel. So what does it mean, V'yoshibum b'makom hazeh? Says the Radak, Elish shahichichu osam. Because what did Moshe and Aaron do? They were master motivators. They were master speakers. And they were able to teach people the proper way to rebuke them, to teach them the proper behaviors, the limdam lechas derech Hashem, and to act in the way that a person should. V'lefikach, and because of them, therefore, nichnasul aretz. It was Moshe and Aaron that caused the Jewish people to live in Israel. They're not the ones that unpacked their bags and opened and drove the U-Haul in front of their house in Israel and set up exactly where their furniture should be in their house. But it was because of Moshe and Aaron's rebuking and giving proper instruction and educating them, that's what caused them to merit to live in Israel. Therefore, they're given the credit that they're the ones that caused you to settle in this place. And therefore, sometimes, as they say, we say to children, there's such a thing as called tough love. You know, children don't understand it. That, you know, you tell a child who's about to cross the street, you grab hold of them, and they think that you hate them, but the truth is you care about them, you love them tremendously. And that's what will save their life, because you're watching them and you're giving them the guidance to make sure that they're safe, that they're out of harm's way. And that's what Moshe and Aaron were as well. Moshe and Aaron understood that they had to rebuke and give tough love to the Jewish people so that they would learn the proper behaviors, then in turn merit to live in Israel. And therefore, says Shmuel, that's what I'm doing now. You're not going to like what I'm about to say. You're going to be pretty angry. I know Shmuel perhaps maybe could have been a stand-up comic and people enjoyed when he was a funny guy, but right now I can't be a funny guy. Now I have to really lay down the law. I have to be tough with you. And I know you're not going to like it, but I'm telling you now, just like with Moshe and Aaron, it's for your own good. And Vayoshivam b'makom hazeh was Moshe and Aaron because they rebuked the people that they merited to be in Israel, and that's the reason why I'm speaking this way as well, so that you will be able to merit to live where you are as well, peacefully. Now going up for a moment, continuing in the Radak, but the Radak before, there's a question. Because it said that when Yaakov went into Egypt, he began screaming and crying. The second he crossed the border, went into Egypt, he began to cry. But if you comb through all of the story in the Torah itself, you don't find that Yaakov was really kicking and screaming going to Israel. In fact, they're starving to death. There was a famine. He was also looking forward to meeting someone he hasn't seen for a long time. A child who never called, never sent the postcard. His name was Yosef. So he was looking forward to go to Egypt. So what do you mean he was crying? Says the Radak, Derech Ketzar Dabar, Diber, that sometimes when the way things are written in the Torah, you can't spell it all out. Because if it would spell it all out, this book would be about, you know, like a phone book. Sometimes it has to be a little more concise. Says the Radak, Ki ka'asher bo Yaakov Mitzrayim lo zaku. The truth is, when Yaakov went into Egypt, he didn't cry. You're right. Lo ha'yolehem b'mali zok. He had no reason to scream. Elo rather, ka'asher bo Yaakov Mitzrayim, that when Yaakov went to Egypt, v'harichu ha'yomim levanav sham, and his children, his grandchildren, were there for a length of days, and they lived long lives there, and they were doing well. Things were great. They had a Jewish person was the vice president. You had the viceroy. You had Joseph. He was probably someone who was pro Israel, pro the Jews, right? He was the second most powerful person in the country. So people were doing well. Then unfortunately came re-elections. V'yakam el chadash al Mitzrayim, and a new king came about. And the new king, as a new administrator sometimes does, they prove themselves to show that they're different. And because of that, their differences might not be good for those people. But Gozer al Yisrael Gezeros, he made it very difficult for the Jewish people, as we know. But Sakhu al Hashem, that's when they cried out. So says the Radak, we don't want to spell it all out, but basically he was saying that Yaakov at first was happy, the Jewish people were doing well, everyone was having a great time in Egypt, then a new guy came into power and made things miserable for the Jewish people. Some explain, unlike the Radak, that you should read the verse literal. And the literal translation of the verse, as we saw in verse 8, is that Yaakov cried, Kasher ba Yaakov Mitzrayim, the moment he went into Egypt. And the reason is because Yaakov looked at Egypt as a cesspool of tumah, of impurity, of people that did not appreciate or value ethics, did not value that which is in the Torah, and he knew that ultimately it could cause the demise of the Jewish people because of their relationship in such a terrible country. That sometimes when a person is even in Mitzrayim, even in Egypt, where at the time he was welcomed with open arms, that people appreciated him and let them feel very comfortable, that sometimes could be the greatest danger for the Jewish people. That he noticed that if the people from Egypt, who were acting inappropriately, accepted the Jewish people with open arms, then perhaps we will assimilate and be similar to them. Which ultimately is what happened, as we mentioned, that the Jewish people were supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years, but because we reached such a low level, if we stayed there much longer, there would have been no turning back. So therefore, perhaps it was Kashir by Yaakov Mitzrayim. Even the moment when Yaakov went in and into this country, into Egypt, he realized that there was certain advantages. There was great food, there was great prosperity, but there was a tremendous potential of disaster, which fortunately, if it wasn't for Hashem causing us to leave Egypt, we in turn would have been stuck there forever. We'd have been completely assimilated. Now, we're going to stop in 2 minutes, but I just want to share one thought, because the question is, why, we mentioned, what's the significance of this history lesson? So we gave one answer. We also have to perhaps understand why this Haftorah is read by Parshas Korach. Now we know that with regard to Parshas Korach, Korach was an individual that wanted a position of power. What was his justification? Because he looked at Moshe and Aaron and he said, "This is, what is this, a family business over here? It's like a mom and pop shop business? Doesn't make sense. All the siblings get the greatest jobs over here? How about, you know, look at some people, once you want to look at the CVs that come in? Doesn't make sense. Why am I not in a position of power?" What was Korach saying? Korach was saying the reason why these people are leaders is because they were self-appointed. They're not appointed by God. There's no spiritual connection at all. They chose these positions themselves. That's what Korach's complaint was. And if it's they are the ones that get to choose, so then I should be able to be the one that's chosen. Because clearly God is not in the picture. And this is perhaps the significance of what Shmuel is saying with this history lesson. When a person looks at Moshe, and you have a whole line of people waiting, and you're the one who is trying to hire someone, and the job is take a whole nation out of a very powerful country called Egypt. And you need to find a person who is very persuasive, someone who is a tremendous public speaker, to be able to convince the most powerful king in the world to get this, all these thousands and millions of people, hundreds of thousands of people to leave his country, all of his slaves, there's millions and billions of dollars that he would be losing. So all of a sudden you have some guy that's sitting down in front of you, and you pull out his resume, and it says, "Oh, your name is Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu, that's your name. Okay, so tell me a little bit about yourself." And as we know, Moshe was an Oral Sefosayim, which means that he was a person that he had a speech impediment. He couldn't speak well. A person who was respectful would say, "Oh, great, terrific. Yeah, I'll call you if there's a job opening. I'll put it in my file." You're garbage. That's where you'll put it. This guy's not qualified. He can't see. It doesn't make sense. So the question is, so why was Moshe chosen? Why someone who was an Aral Sefosayim, why would he be the one to be the one to take the Jewish people out of Egypt? And the answer is, he is not the one that took the Jewish people out of Egypt. And that was the reason why he specifically was chosen. Because a person, if he was a great speaker, and he was smooth and cool the way he dressed and talked, people would say, I know how he did it. He was able to somehow convince Paro through his words and reasoning to get these people out. Instead, Hashem deliberately chose someone who was an Aral Sefosayim, someone that did not have the ability to have the power of his words. That's the person that will talk to the king. That's the person who will be involved in taking the Jews out of Egypt. And therefore, this is what Shmuel is saying here. Shmuel is saying that Moshe and Aaron, Vasher Hela es Avoseichem Eretz Mitzrayim, Moshe and Aaron are the ones that took them out of Egypt, but the truth is it wasn't Moshe and Aaron, it was really God. It was God that was involved in this process. So you should not think, just as Korach did, that the positions of power were self-chosen, but rather it's a position which was accepted only because Hashem thought this was what was best. And therefore, when you told me to accept a king for the Jewish people, you should have listen to what I said, because what I told you was that it's not what Hashem wants. And if it's not what Hashem wants, that's not something which you should do. And therefore, perhaps it gives a perspective of why this is, in fact, is the beginning of their musar, of their lecturing the Jewish people, that instead of only listening to what you think is best, you need to listen to the words of God. Stop here.